Okay, good morning, everyone. Big crowd
Hey.
today. This week's shiur, as always, is sponsored by Itz Weiss CPA. Branch out a new direction next tax season. And breakfast is sponsored by Bagel Munch, Le'ui Nishmas, Feiga, Bas Chaim, and Shimon Ben Zev. We're doing Masechah Sukkah, Daf Mem Aleph, Amud Aleph, and we are three lines from the top. We're picking up from a discussion that started last week about a machlokas between Rav Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan about how you can transfer the kedusha of shvius from one item to another. Now, the machlokas was simply Amar Rav Elazar ein shvius el derech mekar. Rav Elazar said you could only transfer kedusha of shvius of shmita, meaning if you have produce that was grown in the seventh year that has kedusha shvius on it, that means there are all sorts of restrictions. You can't sell it, you can't involve in schora, you have to be careful how you dispose of it, right? There are all sorts of restrictions on shvius. And that kedusha, that status can transfer onto something else if you swap it for something else, if you sell it for something else. So Rav Elazar says that the only way to transfer that kedusha to something else is if you do a derech mekach, if you purchase something in exchange for that item that had kedusha shvius, so then the item that you purchased it for will also now get kedusha shvius on it. And Rav Yochanan said it works either by purchasing something for it, in which case that swap will result in the kedusha shvius attaching to the new item, to what you purchased it for, or also derech chilul. You could simply take your fruit in front of you and take a coin in front of you. And without it being a third-party transaction, an arm's-length transaction with someone else, just in front of you could swap the two, and then the Kedusha Shvius will attach onto the new item. Now, usually when we talk about transferring Kedusha, like, for example, Maaser Sheni or Hekdesh or things like that, we talk about it being a full swap so that the Kedusha transfers onto the new thing and then is removed from the old thing. But at least the way the Gemara worked on Mem Amud Beis, by Shvius, that's not true. If you have a tomato or if you have a cucumber that grows in Eretz Yisrael during the seventh year, if you then swap that cucumber for a coin, the cucumber still retains its Kedusha Shvius. You can't be Mechalel Kedusha Shvius onto something else. So in this context that we were talking about, this Machlokas Rav Elazar of Yochanan, we're simply talking about the Kedusha spreading onto the new thing. But it's not as if it's pukkah, it's not as if it comes off of the original thing. And so again, Rav Elazar said that you can spread onto the new thing only if you purchase something with that item that had Kedusha Shvius. And Rav Yochanan said it spreads onto the new thing not only if you purchase something with Kedusha Shvius, but also if you just swap them in front of you and kind of attach that Kedusha onto the new thing. That was the Machlokas as we understood it back then. Says Rav Ashi, Machlokas bepri-rishon. That's only true. That whole machlokas only applies if we're talking about the actual shvius item itself, the cucumber. So when it comes to the cucumber, this machlokas exists. Aval bepri-sheni, if the cucumber already transferred its kedusha onto something else, let's say we're talking about a coin, that you transfer that kedusha shvius onto the coin. If we're talking about the coin, then divrei hakol ben derech mekach, ben derech chilul. So then everyone would agree that that coin's kedusha could then transfer onto another item, whether it's derech mekach or derech chilul, whether it's through a purchase transaction or through just a swap in front of you. Now, what's interesting now is once Rav Ashi said that, the caveat that I just mentioned before no longer applies. Remember, we said until now that this whole machlokas about it has to do with about spreading kedusha shvius, but it's not pakka. The kedusha doesn't go away. But that's true only if you were talking about the pre-rishon, if the kedusha, it's the cucumber itself that grew in the seventh year. If we're talking about now a secondary item, like the coin that got kedusha shvius, so when it comes to the coin, then it's a whole different story. When it comes to the coin, if you now transfer the kedusha from the coin onto another coin or onto a television that you buy or whatever it is that you buy with that coin, so then the kedusha is paka from the coin, and that kind of changes the conversation a little bit, but that's a side point.
It's almost a little bit like, not exactly, but somewhat like tumah. Like, you know, there's
Yeah.
as it passes down, it gets weaker and weaker in terms of its force, so to speak.
Yeah, that's I guess that's true.
Not exactly.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. Good. Good.
Why would somebody want to spread
Why would someone want to spray Kedusha Shvias? It's a good question. Meaning, Derech Mekach, it's just going to happen to spread you because you did it. You wanted to engage in that transaction. Why would you want to do Chilul on something else? It could be you were mistaken as to Lach and you thought you could be Paka, the Kedusha, and then we're saying tough luck now. Now both of them, it's like a Tamura kind of situation. Now both of them are Kodesh. I'm not sure. That it could be that that's what's going on. Of wanting to spread the Kedusha. It could be. You're an altruistic Kedusha Shvias spreader.
Well, then you're eating Kedusha Shvias, right? You can imagine,
I want everything to be Kedush, yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay, it could be also, yeah. Okay, fine. So that's Rav Ashi's qualification. Rav Ashi says, this machlokes between Rav Lezer and Rav Yochanan only applies...
Mem Aleph. Okay.
We're three lines from the bottom. I'm Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi says, the machlokes that we just cited above, that's true only but the original cucumber. Ava bepri sheni, when it comes to the coin that the Kedusha had spread to, so then divrei akol bein derech mekach bein derech chilul, then you could swap the Kedusha from that coin onto something else, either through a transaction or through a swap right in front of you. Okay, then we're going to have to deal with some of the proofs we brought on Mem Amud Beis to fit into Rav Ashi's paradigm here. So we say, V'adikatani lakach lakach. If you remember, one of the proofs was a brisa that said, lakach beperos shvias basar, Elu ve'elu misbarim b'shvias lakach b'basar dagim. It's talking about, later transactions, not just the pre-rishon, but even later manifestations, meaning the secondary and the third transfer of kedusha shvias. So then, idi detana reisha lakach tana nami seifa. That's lav dafka lakach. The proof to Rav Elazar that you could only do a derech mekach was this brisa that said that when you transfer it from one to another and another to another, it always phrased it in a matter of lakach, as if you bought it. And that seemed to be a proof to Rav Elazar that it can only be derech mekach. And so now we're saying that's not true, because even Rav Elazar is going to agree that you could do a derech chilul once it's past that first generation. So we're saying, okay, lakach didn't really have such significance in that brisa. It's just that since you used lakach in the first instance, so it the later instances is also lakach. Fine. So that's how they get rid of that problem. Now, Esve Ravina or Rav Ashi. So Ravina is going to bring a challenge to Rav Ashi. How can you say, Rav Ashi, that this machlokes only pertains to that first generation of the cucumber, but that later chilulim can be, according to anyone, derech mekach or derech chilul? Because he brings a brace that says the following: Mishiyesh lo sela shel shvias. Let's say you have a coin that has kedusha shvias on it. Again, this is now a second generation. The coin didn't grow from the ground. The coin got kedusha shvias because you swapped it for a cucumber that had kedusha shvias. So you take this sela. Now this sela is kedusha shvias. Now you want to buy a coat with it, right? You want to buy a shirt with it. You're not really allowed to do that because it is kedusha shvias. You're not supposed to use it for general mekach memkar. So what do you do? Bikesh liko chabal chalak. What ketzad yase? What should you do? Yeleich eitzel chanvani haragil etzlo. So this fix now is going to presume that you can only do a derech mekach, right? Because the simplest way to do it, say, take this coin and just say, okay, I'm transferring the kedusha of this coin back onto the cucumber or onto a tomato or whatever, or onto a television, whatever it is, and that should work. But this presumes that you can only do a derech mekach. So it tells you a formula. Go to a store owner that you trust who will work with you to do this swap, v'omer lo, and then basically do a chilul derech mekach as if you're purchasing it when you're both wink wink nodding to each other that you're just going to kind of swap it back out. So what do? V'omer lo, tingli besela peros. I'm going to buy some peros with this sela. Again, this sela, this coin has kedusha shvias. You give it to the store owner, he gives you cucumbers in exchange. Those cucumbers now have kedusha shvias on them. V'nosing, but the kedusha has been paka from the sela; it's no longer attaches to the coin. V'nosing lo, and he now gives you the coin back. V'chozer v'omer lo, hare peros halalu nisunim l'cha b'matana, and you give him the peros back. Now, the peiros have kedusha shvius on them, but that's no big deal for this chenvani, because he'll just give it to, he'll sell the peiros to another guy who can use them consistent with kedusha shvius. Or he'll use it consistent with kedusha shvius, whatever it is. But you now have your coin, and now your coin is free from kedusha shvius, and you could do it. You can now buy a shirt with that coin. That's the conclusion. V'hu omer lo halacha selazu b'matana. So the store owner gives you the sella back, and then you could buy your shirt with the sella. So that was all a tricky way of being mechalel kedusha from the sella back onto fruit. But clearly, the Braisa required that you do a derech mekach, because it due to this convoluted way where you needed the cooperation of your friendly store owner, right? That clearly shows that you could only do a derech mekach. This is a problem for Rav Ashi, because Rav Ashi said that the only limitation that requires you to do derech mekach is only on the peros rishonim. But everyone agrees, or potentially in the machlokas, but everyone agrees that when it comes to the pre-sheni, then you could do a derech mekach or derech chil. So this, you were trying to get the kedusha shvius off of this sela. That's clearly a pre-rishon. This sela didn't grow in the ground. It's just got it secondarily. And so if you wanted to get the kedusha off this sela, why didn't you just do a swap in front of you? Everyone agrees you could do that derech chil.
This whole thing seems like they're trying to, you know, like trick the system.
Yeah.
You know? It's like once I heard the, you know, a bunch of Kollel guys that, you know, when they get their monthly paycheck, whatever it is, $1,500, so you got to give Meiser money. So one guy would give it to his buddy, you know, the Kollel guy, hey, you're Talmud Chacham, here's whatever, 150, and he's giving it to the next one, and he's giving it to the next one, and eventually you get it back. And it's like, yeah, you know, they each gave Meiser.
Okay, that's a little different than this, because here we're just dealing with technicalities of Kedusha being Chal. That kind of defeats the whole spirit of the law.
Right, so I'm saying like they're trying to trick the system. I mean, what's the
We're looking for a mechanism that'll work, meaning fundamentally there's nothing wrong with being Mechal, with transferring Kedusha from one item to another. It's just that if you're limited and you can only do a Derech Mekach, mm-hmm. So then we have to figure out a system to do a Derech Mekach. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of, you're right, a slightly tricky way of doing a Derech Mekach, but using a cooperative store owner so that you can get the job done. But the point of the Gemara is v'ahacha, depreshenihu. This sela has kedusha shvius as a secondary item. V'katani derech mekach in derech chilulo, and clearly the Bryce is saying it's got to be derech mekach. So this goes directly against what Rav Ashi said. Rav Ashi said that everyone would agree that you could even do a derech chilul when it comes to a secondary item. So what's Rav Ashi going to do? So we're going to rewrite Rav Ashi. Elam Rav Ashi, really Rav Ashi said the following, just the opposite, machlokas bepri sheni. The machlokas between Rav Elazar, where you have one opinion that says that it could only be done derech mekach, that's only when it comes to pri sheni, ava bepri rishon divrei akol derech mekach in derech chilulo. So this is the maskanas hasugya. This is the way we understand Rav Ashi is to say that when it comes to the original cucumber that grew in the ground, everyone agrees you could only do that derech mekach, right? The machlokas is about whether that's true also for the secondary item, for the coin, right? Once kedusha shvius now applies now to the coin, and you want to get it off the coin, so now there's a machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Rav Elazar as to whether you have to do that derech mekach. And the brisa that we just read is obviously a support or within the shita that you could only do a derech mekach and you can't do a derech chilul on the secondary item. But everyone agrees that the pre-rishon, you have to do a derech mekach. That's how Rav Ashi is reinterpreted. And then we are going to kind of challenge that against another one of these brises that we brought on Mem Amid Beis. V'adukatani echad shvias v'echad meiser sheni. So if you look at the bottom, we had a Tanya Kavase de Rabbi Yochanan, five lines from the bottom on Mem Amid Beis, where again, Rabbi Yochanan was the one who said you could do a bein derech mekach, bein derech chilul, and we brought a support for him where we said echad shvius, echad meiser sheni, mischaluin al behema chayev v'of, bein chayim bein shchutin deremer. The point is, we said that you can do it. There we said that you could do a derech chilul, right? You could do it. It didn't require that you do a derech mekach. So how do you explain that? Because, how do you explain that? If we said that the shvius itself can only be done derech mekach, according to everyone. How do you explain this brisa? So we say, my shvius de mei shvius. That brisa is specifically talking about a secondary item, the coin itself. And that's why for the coin, we said you could do it on a behemah chayvov, you could do it derech chilul without a problem. And the Gemara says that's got to be the case. And if you didn't say that, meaning if you thought that this brisa was applying even on the pre-Rishon, even on the original cucumber that grew on the ground, it wouldn't make any sense. Because if you now apply that to the Meiser Sheni, right, that brisa talked about not only Shvius, but it also talked about Meiser Sheni. And the rule with Meiser Sheni is you can't just do it derech chilul onto anything. You can only do it onto a coin. So if this brisa was actually talking about original Meiser Sheni produce, and it said that you could be mechaluit onto a behema chayev oaf, that wouldn't make any sense because we know there's a rule that a Meiser Sheni can only be mechalu onto a coin. So it must be that this brisa was talking about a second generation of Shvius or second generation of Meiser Sheni, and that's why it said you could do it derech chilul. The Gemara concludes the Yilotei Mahachi Meiser Meiser Mamish. How can you say it's talking about Meiser Mamish, the original Meiser? Vaksiva tzarta kesef yadecha. You can only do Meiser Mamish onto kesef, onto a coin. Ela d'mei Meiser. It must be that price is talking about the secondary, the second generation of the Meiser. Let's say, for example, a coin that you put, it's got to be a coin that you put the Meiser Sheni onto, the Kedusha of Meiser Sheni transferred onto a coin, and now you want to transfer that onto a Behema Chayev Oaf, you could do that. So Hachanami Dmei Shvius, and so here too, we're talking about second generation of Shvius as well. Okay, but the bottom line is, that's the way Rav Ashi ends up. He says the Machlokes, about whether it's Derech Mekach, Derech Chilul, applies to the second generation, and then the first generation, the actual produce that grew in the ground, can only be transferred. That kedusha can only be transferred derech mecca, according to everyone. Okay, brand new Mishnah, completely new topic.
Sorry. So everyone holds derech mecca is the only way for the first generation.
Yes, that's right.
The machloket is on the second generation,
right?
The pre-Sheni, that whether you do both mecca bechilo or just mecca.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. That's right. Okay, good. Now, new Mishnah. The Mishnah is back to the topic of Lulav, and now we're talking about kind of the history of how Lulav worked in the Beis HaMikdash versus how it worked outside of the Beis HaMikdash and nowadays. So the Gemara Mishnah says, Barishona, in the old days, Haya Lulav Nital B'Mikdash Shiva Uva Medina Yomechad. Originally, in the old days, they would take the lulav, it was a mitzvah to take the lulav in the Beis HaMikdash all 7 days. And the practice of taking a lulav even outside of the Beis HaMikdash, that was only on the first day of Yontif. Now, there's a machlokas, Rashi and the Rambam, as to how you understand B'Medina. Right? Rashi says B'Medina is B'Yerushalayim Sha'afu K'Gvulim. So Rashi says you understand this literally to say that the mitzvah of bringing it all 7 days, that was in the Beis HaMikdash, literally only in the Beis HaMikdash. But anywhere outside of the walls of the Beis HaMikdash, even in the city of Yerushalayim, which had a certain level of Kedusha, Yerushalayim, even there you'd only bring it 1 day. The Rambam in Perush HaMishnayos on this Mishnah says that B'Medina means outside of Yerushalayim, implying that in Yerushalayim itself you would also bring the Lulav for a full 7 days. So that's a Machlokes Rashi and Rambam. But in any event, that's how it would work. And within the very Kadosh area, whether it's the Mikdash or Yerushalayim, they would bring the Lulav, they would shake the Lulav all 7 days. And then outside, in the rest of the world, they would shake the Lulav just 1 day, the first day. And then, Mishachar of Beis HaMikdash, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Hiskin Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, Shiehi Lulav Nital B'Medina Shiva, Zecher U'Mikdash. So in order to remember the old days when we would take the lulav every day in the Mikdash, so now he spread that and said outside of Yerushalayim, outside of the Beis HaMikdash, we're going to bring the lulav like we do nowadays all 7 days. But that's not the original, original Torah Dikah mitzvah. The original Torah Dikah mitzvah would only be to do it 1 day outside of the Beis HaMikdash. But again, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai says nowadays after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, we bring it all 7 days outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, once the Mishnah is mentioning one of the takanos of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, that Zecher HaMikdash, the Mishnah also mentions another takana, completely unrelated, that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai made, Zecher Mikdash, to remember the Beis Mikdash, and that is Vishiyehe Yom Haneif Kuo Aser, that the day that the Karban HaOmer was brought, you couldn't eat Chadash until, you couldn't eat the new grain until the end of the day. The way this worked is, any grain that was harvested prior to Pesach, right, was considered, you couldn't eat that grain until the new grain of the year, you couldn't eat it until after the Karban HaOmer was brought. The Karban HaOmer was brought on the 16th day of Nisan, meaning the first day of Chol HaMoed, when Yom Tov was only one day in Eretz Yisrael. The first day of Chol HaMoed Pesach, they would bring the Karban HaOmer, and they would bring it based on the reapings of the Omer that they would take Motzei Yom Tov, meaning after Yom Tov ended on the 15th, after the first day of Pesach ended, they would go out, they would cut, and they would do all sorts of processing, a very, very elaborate processing to, you know, to grind it down and make bread. And then that Karban HaOmer was brought on the 16th day of Nisan. And then after you brought the Karban HaOmer, that's when you were able to eat bread from the new harvest. That's the Shas Heter for the bread. Now, the Gemara Menachos, as Rashi points out here, the Gemara Menachos points out that there's a slight ambiguity in the Psukim. Because the Psukim, on the one hand, make it sound like you can eat the new grain, the Chadash, from morning of the 16th, from Achaher Mizrach, from the beginning of that day. And then there are other Psukim, or there are another aspect of the Psuk, makes it sound like you could only eat it after the Karban HaOmer is brought. So which way is it? Are you able to eat it from morning of the 16th? Or do you have to wait till the Karban HaOmer is brought on the 16th, which is going to be, let's say, around Chatzos, right? So the Gemara in Menachos says the solution to that ambiguity in the Psukim is that when there was a Beis HaMikdash, you'd bring the Karban HaOmer, so then you'd start eating your Chadash from the time the Karban HaOmer was brought. But the Torah knew that there wouldn't always be a Beis HaMikdash, and so when there's no Beis HaMikdash and you're not bringing the Karban HaOmer, so then you can already eat your Chadash from morning time. Now, here was the problem. I'm going a little ahead, but just to understand these five words in the Mishnah of what Rabbi Yochanan's Ben Zakkai's takana was, the problem was he was afraid that, let's go through the Gemara. We'll see exactly what the nature of his takana was. But the bottom line is he says that even though you can, based on what we just said, based on the Psukim, when there's no Beis HaMikdash, you can already eat the Chadash from the morning. He said you have to wait until the end of the day. He was concerned that people would get confused because they would say, last year we weren't able to eat the Omer until Chatzos, right? Or which is it? No, it's Meir Yibana HaMikdash. He's concerned the following. He's concerned that now that there's no Beis HaMikdash, and you're going to follow the Torah law, and you're going to already eat Chadash from the morning. So what's going to happen? Next year, the Beis HaMikdash is going to be rebuilt, and it's going to be the 16th, and you're going to wake up in the morning, and the first thing you're going to have for your breakfast on the 16th is going to be Chadash, because you said last year, and we'll see exactly what the problem is. It's not exactly last year. Gemara is going to clarify, but you're just talking broadly. You're going to say, last year, I was able to eat my Chadash from the morning. That was when there was no Beis HaMikdash. Now there's a Beis HaMikdash. I didn't learn that there's any difference. And so I'm going to eat Chadash from the morning, whereas really you should be waiting until when? Until the Karban HaOmer is brought, and then you're going to be in trouble. So that's what his problem is. And
what a profound thing that's coming from the person who espoused for Yavna.
Yeah.
Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the one who is preparing.
For the Golas. He's already worried about the future.
Next year, God willing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's right. So that was his concern. And so therefore, he just said, okay, forget this whole thing with mourning. Wait until the end of the day. That's when you could start eating Chadash, not till the end of the day. So the Gemara now says, Minolan da'avdinon zecher u'mikdash. How do we know? What's the source to begin with for this whole concept of doing things zecher u'mikdash? Amar Rav Yochanan da'amar kra. This is a pasuk from Yirmiyah. Ki ela arucha lach. He's prophesizing that I'm going to bring healing to you. Hashem says, I'm going to bring healing to you. Hashem, I will heal your wounds. Ki nidche karulach, because you were called I wrote the translation over the thing, but my eyes are going as I get old, and I can't even read my own handwriting. I think it was how I said, outcast, that's the word. Nitzchak is an outcast. Because I've called you an outcast, Tzion hi dorei shengla, right? He's lamenting the fact that Yerushalayim has been destroyed. Tzion hi, it's Zion in dorei shengla. No one's even thinking about Zion. No one's even thinking about Yerushalayim anymore. He's lamenting the fact that the Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed and everyone's forgotten about Yerushalayim. So the Gemara darshins dorei shengla, he's lamenting the fact that no one's concerned about Yerushalayim. Michlal debay drisha, that shows you that there's a value in thinking about Yerushalayim and remembering Yerushalayim, and that's the source for, that diuk is the source for the idea that we make things zecher l'mikdash. Fine, so let's jump into Vishyeh Yom HaNeif, the last part of the Mishnah, which was talking about this thing with the Karban Omer and eating Chadash. So what's the whole reason of why he said that you should, this is going to be a summary of what we just said, right? What's the whole reason why he said you shouldn't eat Chadash until the end of the day when there's no Beis HaMikdash? My time, Mehera Yubana Beis HaMikdash. Right, our prayer is that God willing, the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt. The Yomru, and people will say, Ishtakeid, last year, Milo Achalnu Beher Mizrach. Last year, we had breakfast with Chadash cereal. We ate from the very beginning. Hashtanami Nechal. Now, too, here now, even after the Beis HaMikdash is built, let's eat our Chadash from the morning. Vinu Lo Yadi, but he didn't realize, Ishtakeid, that last year, do lo have a Beis HaMikdash when there wasn't a Beis HaMikdash, Heir Mizrach Hitir. So then you were able to eat Chadash already with morning, as soon as it the sun shone. Hashta Dika Beis HaMikdash, but now, when there's a Beis HaMikdash, and we're bringing the Karban HaOmer once again, Omer Matir. It's the Omer that allows you to eat Chadash, and really you shouldn't be eating Chadash until, let's call it Chatzos, when the Omer will have been brought. So the Gemara now is going to dive into this a little deeper and say, and question it, and say, Divni Amos, when exactly was this Beis HaMikdash rebuilt? Iwema Divni Bishitzar, if the Beis HaMikdash is not built until sometime during the 16th of Nisan, so then Hare Hitir Heir Mizrach. So then the Chadash is already mutter, because the moment the sun rose on the 16th, when there was no Beis HaMikdash, you're already allowed to eat Chadash. The fact that later in the day the Beis HaMikdash was rebuilt is not going to now retroactively make your Chadash Aser, right? It's Mutter. So it's not that the Beis HaMikdash was built someday during the day of the 16th. Ella, Divni Bechamisar. It must be that the Beis HaMikdash was built on the 15th of Nisan, or even earlier. Maybe it was built Sukkot's time. Maybe it was built a month ago, sometime before. But if that's the case, Mechatzos Hayom U'alon Tishteri. Why does he not let you eat until the end of the day? Because he's worried that Mary, Ban Beis HaMikdash, and you're going to start eating from earlier. Why doesn't he push it till Chatzos? Because by Chatzos, they will have already certainly done the Karban HaOmer. Dehatanan, that during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, we have a Mishnah that says that even people who didn't live within the very closest vicinity of the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore didn't know exactly when they brought the Karban Omer, they could all presume that by Chatzos time, they brought the Karban Omer. There was reason they were making sure to get this all done. There was a lot to be done to prepare for the Karban Omer, but by Chatzos, they definitely got it done. And so everyone could rely on the fact that you could eat your Chadash already from Chatzos. So if that was the case, then why didn't Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai just make the takana that you could eat from Chatzos now instead of from morning? Why did he make you wait the whole day? Why did he say Yom HaNeif Kula Aser? Right, Lefishein Bezdim Mizdatzlin Bo, because Bezdim is not lazy. They're going to get the job done by Chatzos. So the Gemara answers with a middle ground, Lo Tzricha. The case is, or what he's concerned about is, Divni Bilele, where the Beis HaMikdash is built on the night of the 16th, the eve of the 16th, Motzei Yom Tov Rishon of Pesach, Inami, or alternatively, Samuch L'Shkiyas HaChama. Maybe they built the Beis HaMikdash at the very end of the day, as the sun was setting on the first day of Pesach. And the concern there, as Rashi says, is that preparing the Omer takes a lot of effort and a lot of time. If everyone's very concerned with this brand new Beis Hamikdash that just, you know, that was just built. It's going to set them back. They're not going to get everything done in time. And it's true that in a normal year, when you had a Beis Hamikdash, you'd bring the Karban Omer by Chatzos at the latest. This year, everything's going to be completely in upheaval, and you're not going to get to the Karban Omer until later in the day. And that's his concern, that the Beis Hamikdash is going to be rebuilt late in the day, first day of Pesach, or even Motzei Yom Tov Rishon Shel Pesach. That's going to throw the whole schedule off, and therefore, that year, they won't bring the Karban Omer until later in the day, and you're going to end up eating your Chadash already by Chatzos, or by morning, and that's why he says, wait until the end of the day. Fascinatingly, there's the Rishonim talk about the fact that can you build the Beis Hamikdash at night?
Right.
Apparently, you can't build the Beis Hamikdash at night. And according to the second answer, which was that they built it the end of Yontif, you're not allowed to build the Beis Hamikdash on Yontif. So what's the story? So Rashi has this amazing Rashi where he says that's true about the first Beis Hamikdash, second Beis Hamikdash, where you actually had to take hammer and nails to build the Beis Hamikdash. The third Beis Hamikdash is going to fall from the sky.
Yeah.
So you're not, it's allowed to fall from the sky at night, or it's allowed to fall from the sky on Yontif. That's the way Rashi and Tosos both answer. The Meiri says that he doesn't give that answer. He gives a completely different answer. He says that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was concerned that because everyone would be so excited about the arrival of Mashiach and the ability to build the Beis Hamikdash, they would just completely go bananas and they just start building the Beis Hamikdash on Yontif or at night, even though you're not supposed to. And that's what the concern was, which is a great Meiri.
Although we know that, you know, from Parsha Naso, that the Chanukah of Mizbeach went through like Shabbat. And we know that when Shlomo HaMelech and the Bai Rishon, that they were still celebrating through Yom Tov. Right.
Yeah, but they weren't building.
They weren't building.
They weren't building. Here, the Gemara is actually saying that they're building.
They're still doing a
Avodah. Well, they're celebrating.
Everyone was bringing a
Korban. No, there wasn't just. Right, it's true. During Shlomo HaMelech, they set aside Yom Kippur that year.
Yeah,
right, it was a whole.
They
were docha. Right, the Gemara in Moed Katan says that. Right. So, fine. But here we're talking about building mamish. But I love that the Miri is great,
it's
right?
A great
that
one,
you're worried that they're all gonna. That they're just going to get so excited, they're going to just start building on Yontif itself. Okay, so that's one answer. That explains this Yom HaNeif Kugel Aser, according to what was Rav Yochanan's Zemizakai's Takana. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Amar, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak has a completely different understanding of what Rav Yochanan Ben Zakkai's Halacha was here in the Mishnah, of waiting until the end of the day in order to bring the Karban HaOmer. So he says, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai b'shitas Rav Yehuda Amra. That Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was within the shita of Rav Yehuda. The Amar min haTorahu aser. That Rav Yehuda said that you actually can't eat chadash min haTorah until the end of the day. Dechsiv ad etzem hayom hazeh ad itzumo shoyom b'kasavar ad v'ad b'chlal. Right, we had set up this whole thing with this Takanas Chazal, with this Takanas Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, based on the idea that when there's no Beis HaMikdash, you can eat the Chadash already from the very beginning of the day. But that's apparently the subject of Machlokas itself, and Rav Yehuda says you actually can't eat it until the end of the day. And so when Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai said, Sheyehe Yom HaNeif Kulo Aser, he wasn't talking about a Gezeira Drabanan, because of some concern that you'd make a mistake, and that's why you can't eat it until the end of the day. He was reflecting the actual halacha, as articulated by Rabbi Yehuda, that when there's no Beis Hamikdash, you can't eat chadash until the end of the day of the 16th. Right, he does it based on a pasuk, until that day itself, the kasavar ad v'ad b'chlal, and he says when you say the day, you mean the whole day, and therefore you can't eat chadash until the end of the day. So the Gemara is going to now question that. Misavar like Havasei, is that true that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai actually held like this shita of Rabbi Yehuda? V'maflik palgalei, we see a brisa where he seems to be struggling with this opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. He seems to be going against Rabbi Yehuda's shita, which says, right, Mishacharav beis hamigdash hiskin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai shiyeh yom haneif kulo aser, as we said in our Mishnah, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made a takana that you can't eat chadash until the very end of the day. Amr lo, Rabbi Yehuda said, v'alo min haTorah hu aser. Rav Yehuda said, what are you talking about? You're making a takana that you can't eat chadash until the end of the day. The Torah itself says you can't eat chadash until the end of the day when there's no Beis HaMikdash. Dichsiv ad etzem hayom hazeh ad yitzun rosh hayom. The pasuk we just quoted, which says that in a Torah, according to Rav Yehuda, you can't eat chadash until the very end of the day. So we answer, in that brisa, Rav Yehuda was mistaken, and he thought that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was going against him, but really Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was reflecting his own shita. Rav Yehuda hu dekatai. Rav Yehuda was mistaken. Hu savar midrabanan kamar. He thought Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was making a tekana drabanan that was a chiddush to say that you can't eat chadash until the end of the day. And that's why he said, what are you talking about? Why are you making a takana? This is the etzem halacha that you can't eat chadash until the end of the day. But he was mistaken. Velohi, Rav Yehuda was mistaken. Actually, midoraisa kamar. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was actually articulating Rav Yehuda's own shita, that min haTorah you can't eat chadash until the end of the day. The biggest problem with all this is when you read the Mishnah and you read this brisa, it says Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai hiskin. So it sounds very clearly like he's talking about a takana drabanan, you know, so what's going on here? The Gemara says, Vahiskin kamar. The Gemara answers, no, my hiskin, darash vahiskin. Hiskin doesn't mean he made a takana drabanan. It means that he made an enactment, meaning even though last year we started eating the omer from chatzos, we started eating chadash from chatzos once the omer had been brought, now it's a new situation. The Beis Mikdash is destroyed. And so he enacted a new practice based on the Doraisa that you can't eat a chadash until the end of the day. It doesn't mean a takana drabanan in the classical sense. It means he made an enactment. He changed the practice because he, whereas there used to be a Beis Mikdash, now there's no Beis Mikdash. And so he changed the practice, hiskin, consistent with this Doraisa that you, as he interprets the pasuk, as Rav Yehuda interprets the pasuk, that you can't bring, that you can't eat chadash until the end of the day. Fine, that's the end of the Gemara. The more satisfying read of the Mishnah, I think, is the first one, which is that this is a takana drabanan, because you're concerned that people are going to eat the chadash once the Beis Mikdash is rebuilt too early. Okay, the Mishnah now says, Yom Tov Rishon, Arishon Shel Chag Shekalios B'Shabbos. So keep in mind that, you know, our practice now of not bringing a lulav on the first day of Sukkot, that reflects Takana Deraba, which we're going to get to on the bottom of Mem Beis Amud Beis, and it's going to be talked about on Mem Gimel. So we're not in that parsha yet. Right now we're talking about the basic Doraisa rule that you bring a lulav and esrog on the first day. Now, how do you deal with the fact that you can't carry in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim on Yontif, on Shabbos? So that's this Mishnah. And this Mishnah addresses that issue and says, Yom Tov HaRishon Shel Chag Shechalios B'Shabbos. Let's say the first day of Sukkot happens on the first day of Shabbos. Kol Ha'am Malichinis Lo'aveim Lo'beis HaKnesses. You bring your Lulav and Esrog to Shul the night before as you're driving to Shul on Erev Yontif. And you leave it there. L'macharas, and then the next morning, mashkimim, you wake up, you walk to shul, u'boin kol echad v'echad, makiret shalo v'notlo. And you, right, you had your name on your lulav, or in your lulav case, everyone recognizes which lulav and esrog is theirs, and you're notel the lulav. So the Mishnah is just offering a helpful reminder, don't walk with your lulav and esrog on Shabbos, because you're not allowed to carry it, you have to bring it to shul the night before. And specifically, we're saying that you have to use your own, the halacha is that, right, it says, you have to bring your own lulav, you have to be yotzei the mitzvah on the first day of Sukkot with your own lulav, not with your friends. V'shar yimos hachag, as opposed to the rest of the holiday, adam yotzei yidei chavasa b'lulavo shel chaver, you could borrow your friend's lulav and esrog, make the bracha on it without a problem, but on the first day it's got to be yours. Rabbi Yossi Omer Yom Tov HaRishon Shel Chag Shechalios B'Shabbos V'Shachach V'Hotzi Es HaLulav L'Rishus HaRabim Pater Mipnei Sheotzio B'Rishus. Rabbi Yossi is telling us an interesting halacha that sometimes not all the time. There are multiple places in Shas where we talk about this concept of toa bidvar mitzvah. Sometimes if you are over an iser kares that would normally have a chatas if you did it mistakenly, but you're makayim a mitzvah, you are over this iser in the context of performing a mitzvah, that's considered a toa bidvar mitzvah. And there are all sorts of rules that apply to it. The Gemara is going to get into that soon, I think on the next daf. But sometimes when you are a toa bidvar mitzvah, when you are over an iser in the context of doing a mitzvah, you don't bring a karban chatas. It's called a toa bidvar mitzvah. That's Rabbi Yossi's point here. So if you happen to carry your lulav and esrog on Shabbos and we're over an iser that you'd normally bring a karban chatas for, here you wouldn't bring the karban chatas, your putter, because you did it in the context of a mitzvah. Okay, the Gemara says, Minani Mili. What's the source for this idea that you have to bring your own lulav and esrog, you shouldn't borrow from your friend? The Tana Rabbanan Mul Kachtem, Shitego Kicha Biad Kol Echad V'Echad. That morning, meaning each person has to take the lulav, you're not Yotzev or the Chazan taking the lulav. Lachem, right, Lachem, Lachem, Misha Lachem. You have to be Yotzev, the mitzvah of lulav, with your own lulav and esrog. That means that you can't be Mekayim the Mitzvah with something that's borrowed. And you can't be Mekayim the Mitzvah with something that's stolen. Mikan Amru Chachamim, from here Chachamim derived, in Adam Yotzei Dei Chavasu B'Yom Tov Rishon Shel Chag B'Ulavo Shel Chavero Elim Kein Nasnu Lov Matana. The halach is you can't be Yotzei the Mitzvah of Lov with your friend's love unless he's actually given it as an absolute gift to you. Now the Gemara has a story to illustrate this. Umaisa Barabban Gamliel, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, the four of them, Shayu Ba'in Bisfina, they were in a boat on Sukkot. V'lohaya Lulav El Rabban Gamliel. Only Rabban Gamliel had remembered to bring his Lulav and Estrog with him. El Rabban Gamliel Bilvad, only him. Shalakho Be'elef Zuz. He had bought this Lulav and Estrog for $1,000. 1,000 zuz. Well, he had paid a lot of money for this lulav and esrog. So Natlo Rabban Gamliel v'yatzabo. So Rabban Gamliel, he was the owner of it. He shook it. He was Yotzei the mitzvah. What did he do then? V'nasno l'Rabbi Yoshua b'matana. He gave it to Rabbi Yoshua as a gift, as an outright gift. That's the point here. Natlo Rabbi Yoshua v'yatzabo. So Rabbi Yoshua was Mekayim the mitzvah, and he was Yotzei. V'nasno Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah b'matana. He gave it to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah as a gift. Natlo Rav Elazar ben Azariah, he took it v'yatza bo v'nasno b'matanu Rabbi Akiva. He was Yotzei the mitzvah. Then he gave it as an absolute gift to Rabbi Akiva. Natlo Rabbi Akiva v'yatza bo v'echziro Rabbi Gamliel. He returned it to its original owner, Rabbi Gamliel, and everyone was happy. Everyone had been Mekayim mitzvah. The point is that each of these had been absolute gifts, and that's the way it worked.
Just like my story before with the call guys.
Yeah, just like the call guys. Right.
They just made the thing.
Right, right. So good. So lama li lameimar hechziro. Why do we mention that they ultimately gave it back to Rabban Gamliel? I mean, that's not so important to the story. The important part of the story is that each one had to own the lulav and esrog when they did it. Why do we follow it up by saying that ultimately they returned it to Rabban Gamliel? So Gemara answers, milsag of urche kamashmalan. It's telling you a story. It's in the context of telling you the story about having to own it. It's telling you a subsidiary halacha, something, by the way, that matana amenas lahachzir shma matana. That if the original intent of all of them had been to give it back to him, meaning if he had only gifted it with the expectation and on the condition that it actually come back to him ultimately, that still works, right? We do this all the time on Sukkot. If your pitam fell off, or you don't have a lulav and esrog, so you have to ask your friend to give you a matana manas achzir. You say, part of the deal is that I'm going to give this back to you, and that still works. That's not considered a deficiency in the matana. And so that's what is taught by the fact that they gave it back to Rabban Gamliel. Ki adam rava, halcha esrog zal manas shechziruhu li, natlo v'yasabo, hechziru yatza lo hechziru yatza. Right? Rava says this halacha that if the person gave you the esrog on the condition that you return back, so then it'll work if you actually give it back. If you don't give it back to him, so then ironically it won't work, right? Because the whole gift was on the condition that you give it back ultimately. And that's how it works, right? It only works if you follow through on the condition. Fine. There seemed to also be another kind of fact in that story that was irrelevant to the main story, that he had bought it for $1,000. He had bought it for a lot of money. And the Gemara says, to teach you how important, or the great importance they ascribe to mitzvahs, they were even willing to pay lots of money to be mekayim mitzvah. Amar le mar bara, meimar le ravashi, abba tzluy kematzli bay. So mar bara meimar said to Ravashi, my father would daven with the lulav and esrog in his hand. So Gemara now is going to have a slight problem with that. How can he daven? Presumably we're talking about davening Shemona Esrei. How could he have davened with the lulav and esrog in his hand? Meitzvei, we have a brace that says, Adam tefillin biyado. Don't hold your tefillin in your hand. V'sefer Torah b'cheiko. Don't hold a sefer Torah in your lap. V'yispalel at the same time that you daven, because it's going to be a distraction, right? V'yashtin b'en mayin. This is talking about proper use of tefillin, I think. Don't go to the bathroom while you have tefillin. V'yishin b'en, don't sleep in your tefillin. V'shinas kevel, v'shinas sarai, don't even take a nap with your tefillin on. V'yomer Shmuel said further, sakin ukara kikar umalos hare'ilu kayotze b'en. When you're davening, you shouldn't be holding anything in your hand. You shouldn't be holding a knife in your hand, because we're worried that it's going to fall, right? It's going to distract you from your tefillos, because you're worried that maybe the knife will fall and stub your toes, as Rashi. You shouldn't hold a plate in your hand because you're worried about, you know, dropping the plate. You shouldn't hold a loaf of bread in your hand because you're worried it's going to fall on the ground and get dirty. You shouldn't hold mouse in your hand because you're worried that it's going to get scattered, right? The point is that in all these things, you shouldn't be holding something while you're davening. And so the question is, how could he have davened with a lulav and esrog in his hand? So we answer, hasam lav mitzvah ninu v'tarid behu. Hacha mitzvah ninu v'lo tarid behu. It's different because he was being mekayim the mitzvah here. Those things are not a mitzvah to hold, and therefore they're going to distract you. Here, where it's kind of going to just inspire you to daven better, you're being mekayim the mitzvah while you are davening, so then it's okay to daven while holding a lulav and esrog in your hand. Tanya Rav Elazar bar Tzadok Omer, kachayim in hagan shel anshei Yerushalayim. This was the minhag of the people in Yerushalayim. Adam yotze mi beiso v'lulav biyado. They would hold their lulav when they would go out and they would go on a walk. They'd hold on to their lulav while they were in shul. Kori kriya shema mispalel v'lulav biyado. They would daven. They would say kriya shema while holding the lulav. Kori b'torah v'nosa es kapav. However, when they would read from the Torah, when they would do kriya sa Torah, or when they would duchen manicha agabe karka, they would put it down. Why is that? Because in order to read from the Torah, you have to unroll the Torah, you have to roll it up. You need your hands. You can't be holding lulav. And similarly, if you're doing duchening, you need your hands to duchen. You can't be holding lulav, so they would put it down. When they would go visit the sick, when they would do nicham aveilim, when they would visit someone sitting shiva, they would hold the lulav. Nichnas lebeis hamedrash, mishagir lulav biyad beno, ubiyad avdo, ubiyad shulchav. And when they would go into the base medrash to learn, when they would sit and learn, then they would put the hand the lulav over to their son or to their slave or to their shlich. They would take it out of their hand because, again, Rashi says it's going to be distracting if you're learning while holding the lulav. You want to put all your all into your learning. So my kamash malan, what are we teaching all these the practices of these anshei Yerushalayim? Well, diacha kama hayuz rizim b'mitzvos is to teach you how excited they were about being mekayim mitzvos. And that's what went with that.
Isn't the mitzvah that initial netilah?
Yeah, that's the mitzvah. But I think that it's true. They weren't being mekayim, a formal kiyum maybe with right. each one, but it's kama's reason. It was their chiba for the mitzvah. The chama's reason for mitzvahs.
They obviously didn't see that as distracting from one's kavanah.
I guess so. It's interesting because when it came to learning, that was enough of a distraction that they would set it aside. Yeah. But for the davening, I guess it enhanced their kavanah. It was all consistent with what they were davening about.
Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.